if you're trying to create something new, then by definition, there are no answers. And for many people, that can be very frustrating. And so you need to have a lot of depth in how much you are connected to what you're trying to solve.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. My name is Sagi. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. And today I have the pleasure, unique pleasure, of hosting Kelly Eliau. She's the Senior Director of Product Marketing at Salesforce. Hey, Kelly. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, there's another something special about Kelly. She happens to be my wife. And today we're going to do something a little different. So at Tonkin, we celebrated this week our 10 years anniversary. And doing this for 10 years, especially around improving operations, I thought that might be an interesting topic to go back and talk about the journey and how we did, but also how the market have changed. But I can't question myself or interview myself. So Kelly suggested that can be a good idea. And I think that's a fantastic idea. So hopefully this will be fun for everyone, but I'm going to transition the mic to you. And thank you again for doing this.
Absolutely. Well, thanks everyone for joining my podcast. today I'm interviewing Sagi Eliau, and I want to just start with going back to the beginning. I know your favorite thing isn't to necessarily reminisce, but let's go back. It's 2015, if you can believe it or not, what that looks like. And I actually have a very fun image for you here. If you'll give me just a second, I want to bring us back to this time specifically. So how did Tonkin start? What was the idea that you initially had? And then maybe we can kind of unpack how that's evolved.
Yeah, 10 years is a long time. But in many ways, I feel like the reason to start a company 10 years ago is actually more relevant today even than it was 10 years ago, or more likely for the vision to get fulfilled. But yeah, 10 years ago when we started the company, I had the opportunity to be an executive in a public company and kind of feel in different levels how unfun and effective working in a big company is and how much of the time is spent on things that you're not necessarily want to do or are relevant to your to the task at hand. And in many ways, it all came back to a concept that I still find myself coming back to again and today. And that's sort of like the aha moment. You know, people ask, like, you know, what is the kind of the aha moment, the light bulb moment? And it was that business processes are about people. They're not about data. But 100% of enterprise software is about data. And if you want to get something done, if you think about the process that it takes to do that, usually it involves people. Someone needs to help, something to improve, something needs to collaborate with. But when you look at where enterprise software is and what actually, how you leverage software to help that, to help achieve that, it is actually all tickets. You need to create a ticket and you need to fill the information for the ticket and the other person needs to improve the ticket. And the ticket became really what the work is all surrounding versus what is the outcome that I want to get? What is the reason that I need to achieve that outcome? And I felt like there's a missing layer. There's something above the day-to-day work, above the technology that we've been using, that is not about the ticket. It's about that coordination, that working between people. And it had many names over the years, but very, you know, soon after starting the company, I started calling it the sort of like orchestration of the process. And that orchestration was done fully 100% by people. So technology did not exist in that layer. And that's what we would, you know, was set to solve. And I like to say that 10 years ago, I was saying process orchestration, no one understood what I want from them. So today it's slightly better.
I haven't actually heard that pitch in a really long time. And it like brings me back. So I remember the first time I heard it, we were like driving in this like old Porsche Boxster. We were going to a basketball event. We'd been dating for like, I don't know, a couple months. And you were like telling me about this. And fun fact, we actually worked together at Jive, the company before he started Tonkin. And so I can tell you firsthand that the vision that was conjured for me was actually the way Sagi works, which is that his favorite thing to do in the world would just like once an hour, he would walk by and like stop by everyone's desk on his team and like ask, how's it going? Like anything blocking you? And would like move people along. So he was kind of the original Tonkin of like orchestrating all of these processes. So it's just fun to hear that pitch evolve. How would you say that your idea is different today, or is it different?
One of the things, so there's two parts for this question, right? So I think one of the probably things I'm most proud of looking back 10 years is the vision is exactly the same. It did not change by 1 millimeter. In fact, every time it felt like we're going to change it or adapt it, we just ended up coming back to the same place. And I think that's very important because I think Elon Musk said, like, you starting a business is like chewing glass. It's not easy. And there's a lot of things that happens that are in your control, a lot of things that are not in your control. So being able to have a clear base that you stand on and come back to is critical. And going back to your question, one of the things that another sort of a phrase that I did say early on, and when we raised our seed round, I even did like a, I wrote it in a blog, and it wasn't the perfect English and it's not the perfect grammar, but it just made like a very simple sense to me, which is technology should work for people and not people work for technology. So while that is not like probably the most correct way to say it, the idea was, I felt like technology and software specifically is kind of what I meant for, is supposed to be the leverage that we use in order to do less. And going back to that ticket concept, we spend all this time to trying to translate our thoughts and our needs into this digital form that then needs to be translated back to a different person to do their work. So really all of us just finding ourselves working for the technology versus technology, you know, work for us. And in many ways, up until 2 years ago, this was getting better and better. And we did it in Tonkin, in our platform, did a lot of really powerful things to make that better. But when you add LLMs and AI to it just recently, it is just spot on the exact kind of like problem we are working on, right? Which is, how do you translate what people need into what the machine required in order to run the process? LLM in the name, large language model, is literally about language. It's literally about, let's pick human versus pick machine language. And so in many ways that has really opened up people's mind to believe that what I'm talking about, that orchestration layer, is relevant. And the second half of it is, where does this go from here? And now, you know, everyone talks about agents and talks about the improvements and what can AI do when it is more autonomous? How do you bring that together with the rest of the organization? And an organization could be anything that is trying to achieve a goal, whether it's different agents working together, whether the agents work with people and people work together and so on and so forth. So all of that still, again, sits under the same idea that we started the company on. So in many ways, it didn't change at all. And in some other ways, it crystallized further into reality in the last few years, even more so.
Having gone through it with you, it's what's kind of crazy is, to your point of like the 2 years, is you sort of waited 8 years for the world and technology to catch up that initial idea. Like, yes, you could explain it. Yes, you could do it. But again, like the maturity wasn't there. And then there were sort of foundational pieces with the advancements in AI that just like created this unlock of like, ah, right now everyone's talking about orchestration. I think it's like probably one of the most commonly used terms. And, you know, the idea of these automated processes and like technology, right? Agents working for you. So yeah, crazy.
Here's a funny anecdote. Speaking of funny anecdotes, a lot of people ask me what's the name Tonkin is. You know, then a lot of people like the logo, right? So the logo is a monkey head with a fiery hair, if you haven't seen it. But then the name Tonkin is a type of a primate, is a type of a monkey. And speaking of agents, and again, I've been telling this, so people ask me, where does the name come from for the entirety of the 10 years, right? but only now I can make that connection and people understand better. This is sort of like the original idea for an agent, because we said we want something that is better than a stupid bot, which was sort of like a stupid software, but not as smart as humans, and therefore a monkey, something that can sit with you, you know, during the process, and be part of the process, be an active part of the process, but at the same time, work for you. And that's kind of the point of like, be less than a human in the sense of like the human is still the point of the process, but you can have that. And back then, the idea of having actual intelligence in it was, like you said, not clear when this will happen, but the structure of it, and then trying to bridge the gap in intelligence with other capabilities was something that we've been doing since day one. So yeah, it's definitely some part of it is early to the market, but the other part is allowed us to really build fundamentals that made now that the transition to this new technology a lot more seamless and immediate impact for like our large enterprise customers.
Absolutely. So double clicking into that, right? It's sort of that evolution is basically kind of a another term for a pivot. And we know that every startup goes through, you know, at least one pivot, if not multiple. What would you say is Tonkin's biggest pivot? How did that come about? What did that unlock? Can you kind of like explain that story and give us some color there?
Yeah. So again, we did not actually pivot on the mission or the vision. So that's one thing. But absolutely, there was adjustments or pivots in how we go to market with it. Some of it, or most of it, was trying to understand where the market is, right? Because it's one thing, you can be like, you can be right, but you know, just shouting at the wall will make you very smart. So how do you bridge those two kind of like future state that you believe in with where the market is at? So I would say there are three pivots almost from that go-to-market perspective. The first one is almost like we never talk about, but it happened within the first year. And it's really was an understanding that, so we came from the previous company that we worked for, and that the things I was involved on required working with big enterprises, doing enterprise sales. And coming out of it, I kind of felt like, I don't know if I want to do enterprise sales. They're slower. They take a long time and they're sometimes political. There's a lot of impact in it. You know, when you're successful, you're impacting a lot of people in a good way, but I kind of trying to stay away from it. And so when you started the company, we were thinking about doing like more of like a bottom up B2B versus like doing enterprise sales. But we clearly realized that this is just not who we are and not the world we understand. And so that was sort of like the first mini pivot, is just understanding that we are an enterprise, you know, solution. So the vast majority of the company life, that's kind of was our main focus. And then there's a couple others within it. The next big one was understanding that in many ways, looking back, the first iteration of Tonkin was actually closer to the agents, which is you're able to define like things you want it to help you with as an organization. And in many ways, we try to put too much magic in it where the technology was not there yet. And so we really kind of pivoted into really selling the platform as a platform and identify that operation teams, and this is where one, we started this podcast actually, is realizing that operation teams are such a key point of the future of the current world, but the modern businesses are really built on operation teams. Those are folks that care about the process. So if my mission for the company is that processes are about people and not data, and I need to move the kind of educate the market that they need to think about it from a people first perspective and not data first. And don't forget, in the last 10 years, like data, like that was like the entire thing, right? So okay, great, we have the data, but now we need to think about the people. So operation teams were really a big focus. And that's kind of where we really had our first kind of wave of like breakout, where we able to bring a lot of, you know, top Fortune 50 companies into the mix and really work with their operation teams to help orchestrate the processes in different departments. And that's the thing, it was really anything. We had customers that have been using us for customer facing processes, and some others that back office processes, and some uses for their internal product, you know, process. It was just super fun and exciting, but also harder to create repeatability for, as well as, you know, a lot more strategic type of buyers. So folks that cutting edge, really kind of thinking ahead of the curve, understand the idea of orchestration. And by the way, now are using agents on our platform and are seeing all the benefit of that early investments. But with the downturn of 2021, 2022, from the economy perspective, it became even clearer that investing in a big enterprise platform that is strategic and you buy it or you onboard it, but then you need to kind of like really think about what process to orchestrate, it's going to be harder to grow with. So the latest pivot was a few years ago when we essentially realized there are some areas where we are already very good at with our current customer base, and being able to focus on those and package those and create a product lines on top of our platform to get people started quick in a quicker and an easier way. That's not instead of the platform, so it's built upon the platform, but was more focusing on legal processes and finance and specifically procurement processes, and allowing all the power of Tonkin to abstract complexity, to improve compliance and efficiency, but really most than everything else to create personalized experience to the process, now packaged in a nice, you know, sort of like tight solution for procurement purchasing or for legal intake and so on.
We joke that I call you the Sean White. And for anyone that doesn't know Sean White, right, he's an Olympian, won tons of gold medals in snowboarding, but his nuance is that he will do like kind of throwaway runs, and then his best run, he'll like save for last. And if you listen to interviews with him, he's like, I don't do it on purpose. It's just like, I work well under pressure. And like his last run is always where he pulls off the most crazy stunts and just like, you know, brings home the gold. And so I always joke that Sagi is Sean White, stresses me out. Can you take me through maybe a couple of maybe your biggest like Sean White moment through all of those pivots? Because those pivots weren't just like, oh, like a nice evolution, right? They were met with a lot of stress and like life or death for the company, factors that were happening around it. Take us through that.
Yeah. Even the first one where we kind of started focus on enterprise, again, sounds obvious, but that was after trying to raise money and hearing probably 100 no's. And being on that decision point of like, do we close the company or is that vision still a valid vision, right? And so that was sort of the first example. A more extreme example of it was on the second pivot with the operation teams and the focusing on the platform. And that is sort of like, the timing of it was also kind of all insane. This is where after that, we really unlocked something, but you know, we talked about meeting the markets where they are. I think in 2018, I spent, I don't even know. It's definitely well over 100, probably even 200 different investors, meeting different investors. We had customers, we had great progress and impact, but we were very early as a company and something just didn't click for the market. Like, again, I was saying orchestration, I was saying operation teams, I was saying a lot of those things people just didn't understand. Or didn't kind of like believe. Maybe they understood what I'm saying, but they just didn't believe. And sometimes a small thing can make a big difference. And at that point, we also had other optionality, you know, we were slightly more mature than the first time, obviously, a few years in. And so we had the opportunity to join other companies and we had the optionality. And so it wasn't about closing the company, but it was essentially about like giving up on that vision. And it was very stressful. It's also, as you know, like the year that we got married, and in this entire kerfuffle really came down to probably 3 weeks before our wedding. And right there, so again, I'm unable to raise money that entire year. I have some optionality to join a bigger company. And right there, like 3 weeks before the wedding, I had the realization that maybe if I'll use different words to describe the vision in a terms that is more commonly known at that point, maybe it will resonate better. And so I tried it out, and I talked with a couple of investors, and I talked about it as a RPA with human in the loop, or RPA for human in the loop processes. So like RPA at that time was robotic process automation. It had the same kind of like ring to it, if you think about it, but practically what it was very different than my vision and orchestration. It was automation of screen people clicking on screens, and then automation does the clicking for them. But when I said robotic, but it was very successful at that time and from a space perspective. And so the ability to talk about our problem statement in the words of the time really all of a sudden changed everything. And it was, like you said, it was very stressful, because at that point, it was literally the weekend of making the decision of going with a different company, or that was the only option because we couldn't raise money. That was the, you know, that weekend I was able to get extension from existing investors, and then went to the wedding, you know, giving up the optionality and decide to continue building. And then 3 months after that, we were able to raise a lot more money and continue to do, you know, great things and invest in our platform. But sometimes those small things really, really make a difference.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast.
Indeed. I mean, I'm in product marketing. Language and relevance is everything. It's so funny because all those things do sound obvious. Like even when you were talking about the like, were for operations and like we have to go after operations folks, it was actually kind of funny you playing that back to me, and those like sounded like the most obvious thing of like, why didn't, you know, why wasn't that obvious to begin with, operations people? But yeah, those things are interesting how they go. Yes, right before our wedding, there were some other very pivotal points that happened around other big events for us. One, even you moving to the US and like us moving in together. I had at that point quit my job and like moved for you. Like, I think that's a good story that you should potentially share. And then our first son and raising money. Two weeks later.
No, I know. It's literally every corner. But yeah, no, this was, very early on that pivot, the first pivot to enterprise was also like as dramatic, you know, as it can be. We essentially were not able to make any progress with our initial play. And at that point, I had to go back to Israel. So we went back and forth when we started dating. And then we were just dating for a little bit. So it wasn't like obvious. Now it sounds kind of obvious. But like, obviously, back then, I remember very clearly, I was telling you, look, we have a problem. I don't have any customers. I don't have any the product. I'm going to pivot and I'm going to do it different. Again, eventually, it wasn't like it was still using the same fundamentals of the product. But we thought that we need to kind of restart. And we were saying, I think that was in April, and I was like, we don't have any money, so I won't be able to kind of like keep flying back and forth. I need, you know, a few months to build a product, get some customers, and then raise money. And then I can come back to the US and have a, you know, the proper visa and everything. And you're like, okay, so what are we going to do? And so we said, why don't you quit your job and come live with me for 6 months in Israel, and then we'll figure it out from there. And to my surprise, you know, I keep saying that I don't know who's crazier, me for suggesting this to you or you for believing me, but you did, and you moved me to Israel, and that was pivotal, because then we could be hands down and figure that out. And we did, like almost on the dime. Like I think I was 2 weeks late from what I told you, right? Yeah. We said by January 1st, and I eventually came here by January 14th or something.
Something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, we were able to kind of change the product completely to be enterprise ready and get initial couple customers and then raise money in October, enough time to get the visa by January and move here. So yeah. Yeah. Literally, like we can spend 2 hours just talking about each one of those corners, because every corner, every time we have, there's a big company situation, it's also the time where we have a personal jump. So yeah.
Something maybe. With the cycles.
Yeah, something, exactly. I think maybe it's just nature.
Something like that. So we've kind of gone through a lot of the struggle and growth and some of those pivotal moments. What advice would you have to your former self starting out that, you know, any other sort of entrepreneur could take from some of these like hard lessons learned, if you will?
It's a good question. I think probably the most basic one is there is no white knight. I think both because new entrepreneurs, we want to believe, but also because the ecosystem sort of like pushed that narrative, especially in social media these days, it's like everywhere, just like people posting like, just follow this advice and you'll be fine, right? Or like, this person is an expert. He want to be your advisor. I hired this like C-level person. They know what they're doing. They have so much experience. They'll fix it for you. This doesn't exist. None of this, in my experience, is real. The only good advisors I've ever had ask me the right question. No one has the answer. Because if they had, then that business that you're trying to create already was already existed or was already too late. If you're trying to create something new, then by definition, there are no answers. And for many people, that can be very frustrating. And so you need to have a lot of depth in how much you are connected to what you're trying to solve. And I think I haven't actually thought about it the way you described it at the beginning, which is sort of like the way I used to work myself, being an orchestrator, but that might be part of it, is because I knew that can work. Like I knew that what I'm trying to solve, the solution I'm thinking about, the problem I'm having is definitely a real problem, but also that the approach I'm going after, I believe to my core is worth solving and is the right approach. And so everything else is just, how do you get there? So I guess my advice is have the core fundamentals of why you're doing this. Prepare for the long run, right? There's no short gain. There's a long game. This is not the, a daily trading. And then look for people that will ask you the tough questions. Don't look for answers. Look for like, what is it you're not asking yourself? Because maybe you don't have the experience, but they're not going to give you the answers. The maximum they can give you is the questions.
That's great. That's great advice. And I feel like even more relevant today when we think about the accessibility of answers and ChatGPT, and like we've talked about it, of like the key to prompting and actually getting a good outcome is simply the questions that you ask and how you're able to kind of like change the thinking as you go through it. I'm actually curious, as you were talking, has Tonkin, like just in building it, in using it within your company, has that changed, I guess, your approach or the way you think about or the way that you manage operations internally?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of things running on Tonkin internally. The pace of change and the ability to kind of like bridge gaps, you're like, I wish this had been different, and now I don't have to like wish it. I'm like expecting it to change, you know. I'm just very easy to do those iterations. We are a smaller company than our customer base, right? There's a reason why we focus on big enterprises, because really where you unlock a lot of the value of orchestration is when you have a big orchestra, right? That's another thing about the word orchestration. Like, why do we call it orchestration? You can have great violinists, right? They can do great. You can put them with a pianist and maybe like a singer, and you have a band, and they'll be great too. You don't need an orchestrator for that. But when you have 130 musicians sitting in a room, you have to get them to sing, to kind of play together. Otherwise, it's just most literally noise, right? Mm-hmm. And so you now need to take that same approach when you think about the process. So while we definitely use Tonkin internally for almost everything, and 100% any company and any organization can benefit from this, the true unlock happens when it's bigger. When the noise is more than just because people are very busy, but because the process is very busy. And so that's the one nuance set there. But Yeah, just the speed of iteration is 100% something you immediately feel.
What's your favorite internal use case that isn't something that you sell? Or isn't something that you like package up, if you will?
We have a lot of use cases internally that are very similar to what we sell. They're just not in the same area. So for example, all of our sales motion around handoff between different departments. So, you know, I don't even know how people live without that thing where every new opportunity that we have that is a certain stage, automatically there's a Slack channel created for it. There's a dump of all the summary of like, what is this about? Inviting the right people, everything automatically inviting, like who needs to know about this opportunity? And then you can talk about this opportunity and work together in that channel. It's automatically created. And then when the deal closes, it is automatically transformed into a different, like literally changed the prefix of the channel to now it's a customer, not an opportunity. And now it's kind of, again, the handoff happens automatically. And we use Gong for calls recording with customers. So, you know, Tonkin integrates with that too. And so there's using AI, it summarizes the calls. So like, I don't even need to go to the calls and bring it into Slack. So I can see in the account channel, like what is going on. And so that's like one area. The different area, there's like everything around engineering and product and customer feedback and tier three escalations and everything about how do you intake feedback from customers and from employees and make them into a product feature. So all that process is fully managed by Tonkin. Now that's the beauty of it. The ticket system we use, like Jira, is still a ticket system. That's where you kind of like create eventually. But I, as a person, or my customer support person, doesn't need to go to the engineering Jira. They don't know how they tag things. They don't know what milestone and sprints or whatnot they're using. They just go to a Slack channel, literally called bug intake, and they just type in the problem and then Tonkin tag it if there's a relevant customers, find historical, you know, related bugs. If there's already a solution, it will propose a solution. It will allow it to escalate, like all this stuff. So we don't sell those use cases. We sell a very similar use cases in the legal world, in the procurement works, in the IT world. Very similar. I can just change the labels and talk about like legal requests and, you know, finance requests, whatnot. But you can use it for any one of those processes. So it's,
we platform.
Operate like that for like years. Like when we were five people, we still had those same process. So that's also fun. Like I think some of the modules we built back then in Tonkin are still running. We haven't touched them for like 7 years.
Very cool. Okay. 10 years. What are you, would you say, the most proud of? And then I want to end on a final question about like a big audacious goal for this year.
What am I most proud of? I think I'm most proud of the quality of the logos we were able to acquire as customers. Caliber of companies that are trusting Tonkin, are running Tonkin as a platform is quite ridiculous. I don't think coming into this, I thought we were able to do that fast. Even when we were not growing as fast as I wanted, and now, you know, knock on wood, we're doing great and we're growing really fast. But even the times where it was harder, the one thing that always stayed the same is that we were able to get the best companies in the world to choose Tonkin.
And can you share some of those logos off the top of your head?
You can find them in the website, but it's you know, the biggest streaming service when you watch at night is a customer. The biggest, most known ride-sharing companies are a customer of Tonkin. The biggest search engine in the world, the biggest credit card in the world, the biggest insurance company in the world, the biggest pharmaceutical company. They're like all logos and names that everyone knows, all chose Tonkin to orchestrate their processes. And that is by far what I'm the most proud of. Second to what I already said. Yeah.
Before you go on though, I was like thinking about this. I was like, can I actually share what I'm most proud of?
Yeah, please.
I am most proud of, honestly, the resilience, because I have been there through from the very beginning. And like, it's shocking to me, like how you're like a goldfish, right? Of like, you're put down, but you're like made stronger by that. and you're like able to forget and move on and have that like same energy and same passion 10 years later, and you're still excited by that core mission. So I just, as you were talking, I just had to share that, like, that's where I see.
Yeah. Thank you. I agree.
What you can be proud of.
I agree. I don't think you can do without it, though. I think it's, you know, it's the lifeline of it. But I agree. And by the way, it's related. Like, I think the fact that we were able to, like, a lot of time, funny enough, if you think about kids, a lot of time kids have, it can be one word that someone tells them that will reinvigorate their confidence and their belief and whatnot. But that word cannot just come from anyone. It needs to come from someone that, it can be anyone, but it needs to be someone for them that makes sense. Maybe like a different kid that they think is very fast, and therefore it's exciting for them. That person says that you're also fast. Or when you're older, like, you know, a teacher or an uncle or whatnot, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it can be anyone, but that someone needs to matter to your thing. And I do think the fact that the top companies, like the top AI companies, a customer, and the top, you know, it's like literally all the top companies looking at every other option in the market have chose Tonkin. So even if we were still figuring out some stuff and being stubborn sometimes on things that the market was not ready for, and have a very specific point of view on the world and didn't take shortcut that some other companies might take, the best companies can see through all of it. And their decision was, what you're doing is the future and you have the best platform. And that to me is the fuel. Because
that one-liner is, you never shared the one-liner. What's the one-liner that we tell our kids?
Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, actually we have a variation of it, but the company, in our company core values, there's always a way. And there's always a way, you just need to find it. And so it's like, you need to look from a different angle. You need to try again, is what we tell our kids. You know, if you fall down, it's about how you get up. And you need to just try again and try again. And yeah, and again, like, that's why it's connected, right? When you see, you need to have a lifeline that really touches the things you care about. Because everything around you might fall apart. But when you have that sort of like core thing, you can keep on going. But absolutely, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, I interrupted you. Second part of my two-parter that we'll end on here. What is your sort of big audacious goal for this year? Like, looking back, what would be something that was like super crazy if it happened?
That's actually harder than it sounds, because I live on the super crazy. I live on the... To me, the extreme is kind of where I want to be in, right? So sometimes voice it is feels like you're going to jinx it, right? And so I want to actually answer that directly. But what I will say is that I do think the market and the world with the technology stage that it's in is in a very pivotal moment for how it looks to interact with software and with tools at work. And I think everyone in the industry are freaking out for a good reason. I think they're freaking out on the wrong things, but they're freaking out for a good reason. And there's a massive opportunity with that. And we are positioned very well for that opportunity. So I'll be very proud if we will be able to really show the world where we play at that junction and how much we can help bring that reality sooner, especially for the most complex, more advanced enterprises that are probably at the biggest risk of that junction too. So yeah, so that's, I don't know if it will happen within a 1 year, but on a sort of like 18 to 24 months type of horizon, like, that is really sort of like what this next couple of years is about.
10x at 10 years. That's going to be my slogan for the year.
Yeah, well, I'll take it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for bearing with me through these questions, joining my podcast. And I'll hand it back to you if there's any closing words you have.
That was brilliant. Maybe you should be a usual host on our podcast. But no, it's exciting. And then this podcast, by the way, is fun too. It's coming up. I think this might be the 120th episode, maybe slightly more. But, you know, I had the pleasure of talking to incredible people that have been doing incredible things. And so it was fun to look through my story. So thank you for doing that. And it was a great 10 years. And yeah, happy birthday. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.